Hi there, this is Photography of Director Podcast, and my name is Vitaly Boxer. I'm a cinematographer and I work on all sorts of different projects, and I've decided to do a podcast about other filmmakers. In part two, we continue our discussion with Joe Eckhart, a director on multiple indie features. We pick up our discussion with a film titled Pizza Man, his biggest film to date, an indie superhero flick starring Frankie Muniz, shot for $2.5 million. So if you missed part one, go back and have a listen. And don't forget, you can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes with a video or audio-only feed. Just look up Photography of Director. And all the links to the films we chat about can be found on photographyofdirector.com. Please enjoy the show. After the short, you did Pizza Man.
We did Pizza Man, yeah. So this executive producer, through a mutual friend, called me up and sent me a script from a film that he came up with the story of, and hired a writer out in Los Angeles to do to write the screenplay. And the guy said he was going to finance the movie himself because, you know, he wanted to get into the movie business and thought something for kids, a children's movie, was probably the best thing because it's not much for kids these days.
So let me show people the movie. It's starring Frankie Muniz. Can you just name a couple of people? Like, once again, it's full of
Frankie
stars.
Frankie Muniz, Stan Lee, Diamond Dallas Page, Roddy Piper, Adam West, Shelley Long, Corbin Burnson.
I mean, these are people we grew up with.
Yeah.
Well, maybe not Frankie, but...
Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah, no, I used to watch it. I'll admit it. Hold on, let's watch it. Let's watch the trailer.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but we have no choice but to take our business elsewhere. We need this, and we need the super serum. And until now, you haven't produced it.
You pull the plug on this project, Edge will fall.
I dedicated my life to this moment.
We've come closer than anyone.
It'll work.
It's got to.
No.
Oh, did the customer ask for hair as an extra topping?
This comes out of your pocket, Buster.
You want to make up for it, you know what you have to do.
No.
Yeah.
Please, anything but that.
Pizza Man Pizza Parlor. You can't beat our super prices.
Hey, Matt. Is that you?
Hold out your hand, please.
A tomato.
If the molecule...
I'm going to skip ahead to show some of the action, too.
Okay.
So here's a little scene just to show that he becomes a superhero. Picks up a car.
I'm looking for Matt Burns. Where is he?
Your father wore that costume for 10 years, and he wore it with pride. So what are you wearing for?
Oh, I'd give it a minute in there.
We're not going anywhere until we find out what we need to know.
Who the hell are you?
I'm Power Man.
Power Man? That's Pizza Man.
Trust me, the P stands for power.
There's only one way that I can recover from this. Extract the power of Pizza Man and...
So I'll stop it here. Obviously, you know, way more money for this one.
Yeah, this is about $2.5 million budget.
Yeah, and even watching it after shooting it all that time ago, it looks bigger, you know.
Mm-hmm.
With all
it
those,
absolutely does.
With all those actors that we all know, and working with Shelley Long, of course, which I never thought I'd be in the same room with Shelley Long. First of all,
she was great.
I was afraid of her. I'll be honest.
Were you really?
Yeah, remember I came up to you and said, "Can you talk to her, please?"
I kind of remember that.
Anyway, Roddy Piper showed up one day, just out of the blue.
No, we actually called him and we hired him. That's why he
showed
up. Well,
for me, I mean, no, I wasn't privy to the discussions, but he sort of showed up and I was like, holy shit, I love Roddy Piper.
And we got Piper through Diamond Dallas Page, who, you know, they're great friends. They wrestled together.
So go over the cast again. How did you put together this crazy list of people? And Frankie Muniz, who was still, I mean, he just came off of Malcolm in the Middle, right? He was still sort of like...
No, Frankie had taken off for a bit already. He already semi-retired. He was doing car racing and then got into a band and was looking to come back into acting again. He took his time off and he was ready to come back. And his agent at the time was a guy named Michael Rotenberg at 3R Entertainment. I mean, his manager. And I knew Rotenberg through Cuba Gooding Jr. And Frankie had the same manager. So I contacted Rotenberg with the offer, and Frankie read it and liked it and thought it'd be his good first movie back from retirement.
So as soon as he agreed, did all the other sort of cast line up behind Frankie?
Sort of. I mean, we had some people already cast before that, like Diamond Dallas Page we had already before, because Diamond, DDP, was in High Hopes. So I had been friends with him already at that point for, I don't know, when did we make this movie, 2010? So at that point, it's ready for 6 years.
So, I mean, obviously you put together a great cast for still an independent film. And yeah. How involved was the, I mean, you know, obviously I know some of these answers, but how involved was the executive producer in this? Because you got a sort of a weird deal. This wasn't like a Hollywood producer.
No, this guy's he's a successful pharmaceutical company owner, pharmaceutical sales owner. So he pretty much entrusted the whole movie into you know, my brain to figure out how to make this work.
And it was fast.
It was very fast.
Go yeah, over I mean, a superhero like, movie. How long? I mean, I remember prep. 1 month of prep, and then 24-day shoot.
24-day shoot.
And we had effects. We had stuntmen. We had, like, the works there.
Yeah, and we had some big guys. I mean, our stunt guy, you know, is Eddie Yantic, who is Nick Cage's stunt double and stunt supervisor on all – stunt coordinator on all his movies, did the movie. This, in fact, was his first $2.5 million budget movie, low-budget movie he's right. ever done. And he only did it out of support for me just because of my relationship with him, having worked on, you know, 3 or 4 Nick Cage movies, you know, over the years with him.
So, I mean, there's a couple of interesting things that are here. One is you somehow managed to keep growing your movies. So you started with Danny Trejo Doc, which I'm sure wasn't expensive. You guys did it alone. You went to a $100,000 movie, right? And then you went to a $2.5 million movie. Like, you're living the life, all right?
Yeah. I wish.
No, I mean, that's cloud nine of a director. You know, that's like, honestly, so few people get to do that, right?
They do. And I'm lucky that I had the chance to do all that.
And so you got to that point. So the guy actually trusted you with the cash. How did you go about then making the movie? Like, to grow so fast, so big, you know, where was the learning curve there in between the $100,000 movie and the $2.5 million movie?
There really is no learning curve. Because it's the same process I use, which was try to make it for as little as possible. Now I get to do more with that money. I paid crew basically the same kind of amount of money. Now I get to have more crew members. You know, I get to have more shooting days as opposed to 11 days. I now have 24 days.
Which is still nothing for
a feature, right.
Well, for a superhero feature.
Yeah, with VFX and special effects and...
At the end of the day, how many VFX stuff, how many shots do you know that were VFX?
Yeah, it was about 84 total shots.
Right.
That you and I did.
Right. And there was no, what's it called? There was no, like, actual effects guy on set besides me and you going over what we need to do.
No, there was no real effects guy on set.
Right. I won't get into that story, but I'm just saying, like, we literally figured it out. Like, I mean, it was sometimes days before, but we had to figure it out ourselves.
Right. And then in post, we had to figure out how to make it work ourselves.
Right. So, I mean, if you want to get to the post, like, it was hard. You have $2.5 million, you think, oh, I'd have a whole editing team. It wasn't like that.
No, it was me behind the AI vid cutting day and night.
How long did it take you, the whole movie, to cut?
I think it was, if I would have chunked it all together, about 6 months, you know, and then we had to wait for the VFX to be done.
How long did that take, total?
Man, with all the drama behind that, you know. We had one guy on board, and that didn't work out. And then,
well, let's go into that. That's an interesting story. You don't have to mention names, of course, but what happened with the person who was hired to do the effects, and then what happened after he couldn't do them? You know, give us that little bit.
Yeah,
whatever you want to tell.
Someone said, you know, they sell you the world. They can totally do it. Yeah, I can do it. And the time comes to actually perform, they're MIA. They don't do it. They did, you know, I think it was like 8% of the 100% of the shots he was supposed to, you know, do. That's all he did. So at that point, I had a contract with my executive producer that I had to, you know, keep to and fulfill. So I know you and I then took the list and we started jamming through it. And we got another guy on board, a guy named Andre Basso, that came in and did some really hard stuff that you and I couldn't handle. And he did, it was like, 15, 20 shots. And then you and I did the majority of the rest ourselves just to get it done. I had no choice. I didn't use After Effects before that. I had like an understanding of it.
Right. That was the first time? Really?
At that level, yeah.
Right, right. At the feature film level.
I mean, I'm doing wire removal and, making Pizza Man fly in the movie. Like, wait, what? I'm doing that? I'm supposed to be editing and directing and producing, but now I'm doing visual effects as well. Okay.
Right.
But I had to do it.
So, that whole process, was that a year of visual effects, roughly?
Yeah, if you include all the drama in it, yeah. A lot of that downtime fighting in the middle.
Well, it counts. It took basically another year.
It added a year getting screwed over by the VFX guy. It took another year to get the movie back on track.
Right. And then it was finished, obviously. And right now, where is it available? Can people watch it?
Now it's available on iTunes and Walmart. All the stores have them.
Didn't know that. It is on iTunes? Like I could go get it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's on iTunes now.
Okay, cool. How come I didn't get a free copy?
Same reason why I didn't.
It's HD, right?
At least. It is HD on iTunes. Yeah.
So after that, we'll go through all the features, of course. I don't know if you have the other ones on your site even, but you have. Let's go back to your site for a second.
So an Extinction.
Yeah, you don't have Extinction on there, and. Is there a trailer of that or no?
There is a trailer for Extinction, yeah. Let's see. I'll find out while we're chatting here.
Okay, great. So we're back on, and Extinction... here's a trailer, of course, for Extinction. Let me just play it.
Safety room.
Shit!
We woke up in here. We found you.
What happens when the countdown reaches zero?
Anything and everything left in this room will be vaporized.
Nobody's left the room, right?
We're stuck in here, and we have no idea what the hell is going on out there.
You think if you can get out of here, you're gonna be safe?
This was classified, top secret.
We mean shit.
Oh, fuck you!
What we work on is vastly more dangerous, infinitely more valuable.
It's only one logical thing to do.
Stay. Cool, so I'll let people watch the rest if they want to see it. Obviously, it's way different. It seems like... This is the genre where it's a the single room, four characters are in a single room type of a thing. I don't know what the genre is called, but basically you do it at one location, you try to save a bunch of money and sell the project.
The sci-fi thriller.
That's what it's called.
You shot it. You should know.
No, I loved shooting it, by the way, because, just to discuss what we did, we spent... should we tell them the number of days we spent shooting it?
Yeah, go ahead.
It was 5 days?
Four and a half.
Right? The last day was a half a day. So basically 5 days. And plus it was 4 days of pre-rigging, which was amazing to actually light that whole set. So I had a blast. Like, it was amazing to have 4 days at one location and light it and make it, do what we want with it, So the question is, how did you get it? Why did you do it? And what's going on with that film? Because I've heard very little of it since basically a couple of years ago.
Well, the executive producer is also the writer. And he lives out in the United Kingdom and contacted me and asked me if I would like to direct this movie.
How did you meet that guy?
I honestly don't remember.
Okay.
I don't remember. But
executive producers land in your lap, basically.
The budget was $30,000, nothing crazy, It was like super low budget, a micro budget. And, he's like, could you do it? It's all one location. So then I read it. I was like, yeah, I think we can. I think I gave you the script to see what you thought, and we can shoot it in that.
Here's a question for you. Let me interject, because this is interesting. You went from $2.5 million movie, which was obviously spectacular, beautiful catering, and do you know what I mean? Like, any lights we wanted, and a 10-ton gripping electric truck, and a big crew, to basically like a small crew. You know, I had like, I think, three or four guys. It was really small for me. And obviously ACs and stuff. But how did, you know, like as a director, do you care that it's a lower budget? Did you care? Or did you just want to keep directing?
I didn't care because I thought the way we were going to shoot it and how the story presented itself would lend to the movie. Like it didn't bother me because I knew it's going to look good at the end of the day.
Right.
You know, and we can cut it together. It's a good story. It's really fast paced and intense. Right. We shot the movie essentially in real time.
We did. Actually, tell them how we did that. How we shot the film.
Well, the cast was amazing, right? So we had, like, you know, Rebecca Bloomhagen from A Girl's Guide to Depravity, and then later we ended up working with her on Other Plans as our lead, and then Corin Nemec. So these guys, they rehearsed the movie as if it's a play, right? So it's a theatrical play. So they have the entire script in their head. So let's say Monday is the first shoot day. Everyone gets to work at, you know, cast and myself gets to the set at 8 o'clock in the morning. We rehearse for ourselves, by ourselves for an hour. The crew gets there at 9 o'clock. They start getting ready by, you know, 10:30, we're shooting. Break for lunch by 12:30, 1 o'clock.
Well, no, you skipped it. How did we shoot? How did they do it? It's like a play, but basically we broke down the script into little, like 20-page sections?
20-page sections.
And literally just went through.
We went through it. So, the two cameras, we shot with two reds, and you and the other operator are on set with the cameras, and we're following, you know, we do a take, full take, following around, you know, as a wide shot, following everybody.
Right, 20-page take.
20-page take. And then we'll reset. Cast gets reset again. Do the next one, you know, following Rebecca around, all the whole thing. So we end up with a take for each character. Which we then later end up editing together, you know.
I mean, that's pretty cool. Like, just thinking about the process was amazing because I got to light for 4 days. And then my gaffer was great. He saw Josh Fisher. He controlled all the lighting because every time someone walked into a different spot, he would adjust the lights subtly to make sure they weren't overexposed, it wasn't too dark, et cetera, et cetera. So
Right. We
had that flexibility. And then we didn't tell the actors to go. We weren't like, oh, you got to stay in here. It was like, go wherever the hell you want.
Yeah.
And we've lived.
They were not constrained to a certain area. Like, you do what you think this character would do, locked in this underground, you know, safe, you know, what it,
bunker.
Bunker, yes. So these guys did that. They had the freedom to run around, and we just had to follow them around.
Did the actors like that process?
They did, because they gave them so much room in order to do what they need as an actor, to as a character. They didn't feel confined.
Well, I really enjoyed that process. So what happened with that, with the movie?
So the movie now is with a company called Rogue Arts in the United States, and it's going to have a release soon. I actually don't have the date. They emailed me today saying they'll have a date soon. But it's going to get a North America.
So once again, it actually got, is getting released.
It's actually going to get released, yeah.
And so people, once again, so all your movies are selling. So
yeah.
We're back to that. All right. Well, that's why I partnered with Joe on the next movie, which we're going to discuss. Because I'm like, all right, this guy's selling movies. This sounds like a good idea.
Fucking hard, but yeah.
Yeah, it's not easy. But I mean, anything worth doing is not easy. So I'm okay with that.
If it was easy, everyone would do it, right?
True, I guess. Why does it have to be so hard, though? So, no, I mean, that's brilliant. So basically every movie you've made has at least got some sort of distribution on it. Even if you self-distribute it, you got it in people's hands. I mean, that's such an accomplishment. I don't even know if you realize it. But when I think about it, it's I work with so many different directors that I know it's so hard for them to do that, you know?
Yeah,
there's only a handful of directors that can get their movies released. And I could count them on my hands, and I've worked with hundreds of directors. You know, it's really difficult for them. So consider that an accomplishment. Good job, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So now we're on to the, I guess, the final film that we shot, where I actually decided to partner with you and we produced it together. So I DP produced, and you directed produced, just to give people some background. So,
and edited.
And edited, too. And let me
you
go.
You and I split the VFX.
Yeah, which we're still doing a 4K version. Soon we got to do some more of that. Hold on, let me just show. It's called Other Plans. You want to tell us a little about it? Just set it up a little bit.
Other Plans. It's basically a Cinderella story in reverse. So, movie starring Jamie Kennedy. You know, we all know from from Scream fame is Cinderella in this movie.
Okay.
But, you know, not character named Cinderella, but that's essentially his character.
Right. That's copyrighted, sir. So let's
mention that. Disney, don't come after me, please.
Right. Mr. Cinderella. All right. So let's just watch it and we'll talk about it.
All right.
Gonna wear that.
I'll work with this.
Are we done conducting the New York Pops?
Holy!
It's time to go now. Clock is ticking. You got a woman waiting. You're gonna need a ride.
Hey, where are you going? We're meeting now.
Huh?
Okay, so I'll stop it here because we sort of see it's you know, Jamie Kennedy is Cinderella and he. There's some magical stuff going on there.
Yep.
So,
see who else is in there? Malik Yoba.
Malik Yoba's in there, right. And he lives in New York now again.
He does. He lives in Brooklyn.
Yeah. I was at his apartment doing voiceover stuff. So obviously it was a low budget. We don't want to discuss that yet. We're still in the process of talking to people and selling the movie. But let's talk about how it was put together. And you've had the script, you know, you actually have a lot of scripts. That's the one thing we didn't discuss. You have maybe 8 different movies that you are in sort of various stages of pre-production. Is that correct? Or
development.
Or development.
Development. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have the rights to a handful of scripts that I've, you know, sought out over the years and have acquired. And through my, you know, networking and meeting people, sometimes, you know, one will, hey, do you have a romantic comedy? We're looking to make one. Oh, actually I do. Here, read this script. You know, it's good to have a script or two from each genre, you know, in your arsenal case.
So we didn't discuss this. This is also fascinating because you were collecting these movies. You were optioning these scripts over how many years? Since when?
I mainly started doing that in about 2008, 2009, optioning scripts.
At what point, after what movie did you decide, hey, this is a smart thing to do?
I was after High Hopes. I mean, I'm not a writer. I'm the first to admit it. I'm just not a script writer. I'm not a screenwriter. So I
No, that's good. You know your weakness. You're not trying to like, oh, I'm trying to be the auteur of everything and write every single word, you know?
No, I'm not going to waste my time doing that. I know it'll be a waste of time. So I'd rather let a professional who knows what they're doing write those scripts. And because of the little success I've had with my scripts, I get a lot of screenwriters emailing me synopsis every day asking me to finance their movie. I wish I had that power.
Right. Instead, you're like, why don't you give me your script?
Yeah, and we work out a deal.
Is that how it happened?
Yeah, to an extent. But for like other plans, for example, it's an interesting story. The writers are Eric Anderson and Emilia Delos are you know, husband and wife, live out in Chicago. And I met Eric through an old mutual manager we had that we both disliked and fired within probably about 6 months of each other back in 2004. Talking about managers before, that's one of them. Mm-hmm. So now we fast forward to 2008 or 9, and Eric reached out to me and said, hey, do you remember me and Eric? And we used to share the same manager, and I had a script that you were attached to direct. You know, I did a rewrite. Would you like to read it? This is a script called Black River. And so, yeah, sure, of course I remember you. So he sent the script, and I liked it, you know, the rewrite he did, and I optioned that. And I was looking for a romantic comedy, and he happened to have a script called Cinderella in Reverse. So I read it, and I really liked it, and we worked out a deal for that one as well. So over the years, from 2009 2014 through last year, I, you know, was working hard to try to raise the money for it, and, you know, had different people attached to it at different times.
The problem with you, there's always some backstory you have to go into, because now we have to tell them you you actually invested time, money, effort for before we did it, before we decided to do it our way. You actually spent like a lot of time. I mean, tell us about that. You went to, I think, AFM, right?
To AFM.
You had investor money to go try to make $1 million movies, not like a couple of hundred thousand. These are $1 million movies, right?
Yeah, my brother George and I put together a slate of films, about 8 or 9 pictures, all different genres, and we went to the American Film Market in 2009 to try to pre-sell rights to these movies. And we developed these scripts. Most of them all had celebrities attached to it. We made posters for them. We even shot trailers for some of them. And we went to AFM. We raised money to go to AFM, and we spent a lot of my own money developing all this, and bought a suite at AFM, and had buyers coming in to try to make offers on the rights. But unfortunately, pre-selling distribution rights isn't really that profitable right now. Or then, I don't know, but right now, but it didn't give us enough money to make the movie based using the pre-sales.
But you did actually pre-sell a bunch of rights.
We did pre-sell a little bit, but nothing.
Wasn't enough
worth talking about, it wasn't enough to do anything with. So it wasn't enough to buy craft service for the shoot, so for the whole run.
So what was the next step?
Back to square one.
Yeah,
and you're out pitching to who people say they have all this money, or people that say they have access to all this money, but push comes to shove, no one does. It's a bunch of bullshit. Most of them are con artists looking for you to pay them a fee to go find you money that they have no interest in ever getting for you. Just paying their rent.
I mean, obviously you've raised money in multiple ways in multiple movies already. So it does happen. It's not like it never happens, but
it doesn't happen the way that these people are pitching it to them. Oh, right. I know this guy. He wants to, put together a film fund and you're going to be in his roster. You're first up. And 2 years later, you spent money on all these fees to get the paperwork done. And you are basically asked out of all that money.
Is that what happened?
Not with me, but I've seen that happen to filmmakers. Yeah. Yeah. Some people, the thing is, you have to pay $10,000. We have legal fees we have to cover. And, we just need to make sure you're serious about this.
Right.
So if you give us $10,000, when we close the deal, we'll give you $10 million to make your movie. So you're telling me I'm basically buying $10 million for $10,000? That doesn't quite make any sense. And why does $10,000 mean I'm serious about filmmaking? Does that make any sense? It just means I'm serious about losing my money.
You have a roster of scripts, like around 8 or so?
Yes.
And you're trying to get made?
Yeah, I had a motorcycle movie. I still have it, called I Ride Alone. We have Peter Fonda attached at one point to be the lead actor in it. We have, the thriller I mentioned before, Black River. We had Diamond Dallas Page and Hulk Hogan attached to it. Other plans we had at that point, we had Lacey Chabert attached as our lead at AFM. What else? We had another one. What was it? I think that was it with the celebs.
So what happened? What happened at AFM after it didn't work out? What did you try to do?
Well, we came back and regrouped and realized, all right, we got to figure out other ways, other means and avenues to get this money to make this movie. Then we realized what we're asking for is a lot of money, right? So it's hard to get the kind of equity, up front to make your film.
How much were you asking for?
Range from $2 million up to, 20 million. Depend. We're doing, with
per
all these
movie.
Shysters.
You're talking about per movie.
Per movie, yeah.
Right.
Depends on the movie. So we kind of realized we need to aim a little lower, keep the cost down. Let's see what can we do to make the movie, even less. And then, was it Ed Burns did Newlyweds. For what, $9,000 up front or something?
I think it was $7,000, $9,000, whatever, somewhere around there.
So then I think that's when you and I started talking. What could we do super cheap and make some money? And then with my ability to get, cast on board and your ability to shoot it and, my ability to, bring the post to the table, we can produce it together. Let's join forces. So I think that's kind of how that started, right? And then we
right.
started, yeah.
It was like, well, we can do this because we have the means of production now. So,
right.
Because I own all the gear,
you and I,
most
we have
of it.
Production and post. Right. Down pat.
Right.
So, I started reaching out to different cast members, and we had just worked with Rebecca Bloomhagen on Extinction, gave her the script, and she wanted to be on board. And then we started looking for our lead actor. And then I think, we had put the Actors Access casting call out, and Jamie Kennedy's people submitted.
Well, we went through, I don't know if we want to, it's up to you if you want to chat about this. We went through a bunch of actors, right?
Yeah, we did. We went through a lot of actors. And the problem is our movies wasn't so low budget, but it was a low budget picture,
Well, who did we have attached? You want to mention first, before Jamie?
Not so much.
Okay, we won't talk about that.
Yeah.
Okay, so Jamie Kennedy, how do we get him? That's a big score for an independent film.
Jamie's people submitted him to us on Actors Access casting call. And then we worked out a deal. We immediately contacted them back. They read the script. They liked it. And we worked out a contract to get him on board. And we figured out when we're going to shoot it. And then at that point, we started casting other people.
We actually had a couple of, the other guys besides Jamie, we had Malik Yoba.
Malik Yoba, again, because of my relationship with him at that point, 15 years earlier, having worked with him on New York on the Cover, and then my, short film, Jimmy in Black and White, stayed friends with him throughout the year.
And then if you want to mention the other actor, Michael, I forgot his last name.
Michael Kostroff?
Yep.
Yeah, Michael Kostroff from The Wire. He was amazing to work with.
I mean, the point is, like I said, we don't want to talk about
budget. Joe Ganniscoli from The Sopranos.
Joe Ganniscoli, right. He was actually amazing in the role. So,
yeah.
Well, what was cool is basically, after shooting so many independent films where even the budgets, even if they were bigger than ours, they could not even get this cast together if they tried,
No. Oh, and Roddy Piper, too, remember?
Oh, yeah. Roddy Piper. That's pretty good. So... basically, I mean, this is an important lesson. Even in an independent film, you should really just aim to get a couple of folks that people know.
Send the offers in, man. The worst they'll say is no. But to not send the offer because you think, who am I and they're not ever going to do my movies? Well, then, yeah, they're not going to do it because they never made the offer.
Right. I don't want to talk about some of the actors we had. We didn't even pay them that much. They just did it because they love acting.
Yeah, they did it to support us and the cause because they knew us and they gave a shit about us. Enough to lend their time to do it.
And they could have said no. It wouldn't have been anything for them.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. So, yeah, that's other plans. We actually did, just to mention briefly, we did get a seller's agent for international. And now we're obviously dealing with distribution in America. So that's where we're at with other plans. I don't know if you want to say anything else about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a good movie. I actually love it a lot. I think it's one of my best pieces as a director.
And we shot it fast, too. You want to still talk about that?
In 12 days? 13 days we shot it.
I think it was including...
Not including that B-roll day. It was like 12, 13 days.
I believe 13 with the pickup shoot, plus there was like 2 days of B-roll, so maybe 15 total, if anything.
Yeah.
But production with the bigger names, that's the other thing for independent filmmakers. You don't need your lead there for the whole thing. We tried to minimize the time we had with the lead, with Jamie Kennedy. I think we had him for, 9 or 10?
We had him the whole run, though.
Okay, so we kept him there. Fuck it.
We kept him there.
But still, you don't have to keep him there for 20 days to shoot a movie. That's what I'm getting at.
No, you can get a name, come in, schedule his stuff for 3-4 days, do it.
Right.
At least you get a name, somebody put in your artwork.
Right. Would you recommend, you need the person to star in the role. You can't just have a supporting actor, right?
You need someone enough. He's in the movie enough to justify putting.
No, for us, yes. But I mean in general.
In general. There's a movie out there. I don't know the name of it. But it's got Kevin Costner on the cover. Mm-hmm. And throwing a baseball. And, everyone knows how his baseball films he's done. But he's in the movie in one scene.
That's terrible.
Which is terrible. I think it's called Chasing Dreams, I think.
No. Other plans, just to make it clear, Jamie Kennedy is the star. He's there the whole time with Rebecca. So, absolutely. Yeah. It wasn't like for a day. He was there for the whole shoot. But I think we only shot with him technically for 9 or 10 days out of those 12 or 13. I believe so.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yeah, the movie called Chasing Dreams with Kevin Costner's in one scene, but they have his face on the cover because he blew up after that.
Damn. We should have done that. We should have put Kevin Costner for one day. I think Joe Pesci applied, right? But he wanted too much money.
Was it Pesci?
I think it was Joe Pesci. We discussed it for a minute. Like, can we raise more money for Joe Pesci?
I think you're right. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. I would love to see Joe Pesci. Hey! You're the super. All right, cool. So let's move on to the last project. Well, not the last one, but the last one you're trying to put together right now. And you actually made... We made a trailer at first for it. So, set me up on this trailer here for I Ride Alone before I play it.
So, I Ride Alone is a true story based on the life of Kevin Benedict. Lives out Midwest, a Vietnam vet who, had battling his demons from coming home from Vietnam and was having a hard time dealing with life and God and, was killed himself. riding around motorcycles drunk and causing havoc, wreaking havoc, I should say. And he turns himself, his life around, and he begins to do good for God after he finds himself. But he takes a road trip from Barstow, California to Texas to try to outrun his pain and his anger of when his mom died, and hops on his bike on his road trip. And on the road trip, he, when he's running away, he meets this young, unsuspecting, real cocky rider who needs his help to get where he needs to get to. And this kid, you know, rich boy, and, you know, mom and dad have lots of money, so he buys a Ducati, but it's way too much bike for this kid to handle. And he realizes he's going to be dead if he doesn't, you know, go with Kevin Benedict to take care of him. So on this journey, the character Mac, he ends up teaching Kevin what it is about, you know, the meaning of life and what it is to be a man, and sends him back home to his wife, who he left in his fit of rage.
So, I mean, to break it down to like a one sentence thing, it's like Easy Rider for the modern day. Is that accurate?
Yes.
No, you're like, no, it's not accurate.
And at one point, Peter Fonda, but no. More of a person trying to find him, who he is.
But it's a road trip. It's a road trip movie. Motorcycle road trip movie.
Yeah.
With basically a relationship between two men.
Yes.
Okay. I got part of it. I read the script. No, it's actually a really, really good script. Who wrote that script?
One of the best scripts I've ever read.
And who wrote that script?
My business partner on that movie.
Okay. Cool. So, I mean, the trailer's not all of that information. We actually shot it without any real actors in it. It was more sort of just to show like a motorcycle theme.
Get the aesthetic going.
Yeah.
Just texture of the movie.
Cool. Why don't I play it? So that was cool. Obviously, we had a fun day out there shooting it. What exactly was the location?
That was Barstow, California.
Right, that was fun. Tell us about, obviously, this trailer does not show exactly a lot. It's like some unknown rider on a bike. Why did we do that?
It was just to get the feel of the movie, to show people what visually they're going to expect to see with this film. We made it for investors, to show investors. This is what the movie's going to look like. There's right. An idea of it.
Yeah, this wasn't meant for audiences. This is meant strictly to raise money.
Investors.
And so give us a little bit of that. I mean, you know, we're going to wrap up soon, but what was that little process right now going on to raise that money? Like, I know you went forward, you went back, you went forward, you went back. So how's that working out?
I've had this movie financed and unfinanced so many times. It's insane. There's so many people who want to jump on board because they love the script, but then ultimately they don't have the money. Then we had the idea to go to Kickstarter with it, and we went to Kickstarter with it, but you know, we weren't able to successfully raise the funds on Kickstarter. So now I'm thinking of other ways to get this movie financed.
You're the only movie who hasn't raised enough on Kickstarter.
That was me. I didn't get the right people attached to it, I guess, to get it financed.
Right. So. Well, I mean, it's hard. I mean, it's still, even after you've sold four or five movies, it's still hard to raise money, basically.
It's really still hard to raise money. It absolutely is for anybody, even in the music industry. You see TLC? They're trying to raise money on Kickstarter to make their next album.
Jesus Christ.
And they're raising $150,000. Like, these are Grammy Award winning musicians, right? Artists. And they're like, it's insane that they can't even get the money to make an album.
I mean, they got to get their own home studio going.
Seriously, get an iBook.
So is this trip of, I mean, because you're probably ahead in most of the game in terms of directing. You've directed 5-6 movies, like actual features. I'm losing track of numbers, but basically that's a good amount to say, like, you're a full-time director for the most part, you know?
Right.
I know you have a post-production, a post-soup job that you do, but still, like, every year or two, you direct a movie.
I do. Yeah, I'm taking a little bit of time off right now from movies, just developing I Ride Alone.
Is that you have to make that?
I have to. I've been working on it for so long, and it's my passion project, the one movie that I have to make. And I will. Something will happen. It'll stars will line up, whatever. Something's going to happen, and I'll bet the lotto and I win, but it'll happen at some point.
Cool. Anything? Any final words for the 70 to 100 people that are listening right now?
Yeah, don't get into the film business. And,
don't get into the film business.
Go become an accountant.
Don't get into the film business. Don't become an accountant. Well, was it worth it becoming a director? Is this something people should pursue?
I love every second of it. It's the hardest fucking business on the planet, and it's the worst fucking business on the planet, but I love it. You know? Just the whole politics of the game and the blah, blah, blah. But most important is our relationships, I think. I really do believe. I don't think I could have made any of the movies that I've made the way I made them without the relationships I've been able to nurture throughout the 20 years I've been doing this now.
Do you still look forward? I mean, now, are you looking forward to being on set, whatever that movie is?
Yeah, absolutely. I crave it. I miss it.
Right. Not as a post-soup, as a director.
Not as a post-supervisor, no. As a director, yeah.
Right. All right, cool, man. Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
And that is what I find interesting about filmmakers. They can go through utter hell, have everything go wrong, every moment utterly unsure of the next one. Be backstabbed, lose funding, have locations pulled, people leave, money pulled. And at the end of the day, they want to do it all again. There is something different about making movies that you can't just say it's like a 9-to-5. It's something most of the people I work with have no choice in. They need to do this. Stay tuned, because next week we have Evan Matthew Weinstein, the director of Leaving Circadia. Don't forget, you can email us at info@photographyofdirector.com if you have any show ideas or would even want to be on the show. Please let us know.